Greetings in the light and love of the Most Radiant One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening our topic is Awakening from the World Dream, the Journey from Darkness to Light. So let's take a deep breath and feel the anointing of the Divine Spirit pouring down over you like a mantle of beautiful, golden, gracious light. And as you begin to integrate with that divine component that is birthless, deathless, eternal, ever pure, ever one with God, the very light and love and living word of the Supreme, which dwells within you as its living stone, as its tabernacle. That, beloved, is the purpose of your human presentation in time and space, to simply be the image of the Creator, seemingly positioned in time and space. But that, beloveds, is the grand dream from which we are gradually awakening to discover that in highest truth we have never left the heart of God, except in a tiny instant that was just as instantly corrupted, but which seemingly in time is progressing gradually by stages into the full dawn of light. When truth merges with love, you have the light of God. So the light of God is simply truth wedded with love. And you are the very embodiment of truth, satya, and love, prema, and jyoti, light. So tonight our lens of consciousness will be taking a positioning of the Vedic truth. It will be an impartation that is closed in a way that hopefully we can have a little different viewpoint. I believe that the gem of truth shines all the more brightly in divine revelation when it is held up and each facet is allowed to bring forward its own unique ray, its own impartation of clarity and beauty and scintillating brilliance. Because truth is much like the experience of the five blind men encountering the elephant and each trying to describe the part of the elephant that they were in contact with. Some experiencing the elephant as a wall, some a twig, some a fan, some a snake, some as the leg of a tree. And in like manner, depending upon how the truth within us is refracted and reflected from the chrysalis of experience and conditioning that has formed our individual perspective, our individual, let's say, matrix of conditioned understanding. To that degree, do certain turnings, let's say, of that gem of perception, that gem of truth, as it revolves and turns and catches different rays of light, it tends to awaken and decode portions of the brain that perhaps heretofore have not been exposed in that particular way to light. I think it is most helpful at times to depart the customary wording and understanding and to take a different viewpoint, a different approach. This is perhaps not appropriate for someone who is very new to the spiritual life because it can cause confusion. But then this particular transmission is not for the beginner, but rather for those souls who identify with being the workmen and laborers in the vineyard of the Lord, those who have a sense of divine purpose and destiny and a calling that has sent them forth into time-space in this particular period of time to be the representations and representatives and ambassadors of the divine kingdom as it unfolds upon earth and awakens as a state of divine sonship with God. So take another deep breath and allow the anointing that seems to pour down over you to touch to and meet with the uprising of that anointing from the very core of your innermost self. That convergence forms what has been depicted as the Mogen David, or the Star of David, or the symbol of the conjoined triangles. The downpouring of grace met with the uprising of consecration and devotion to the Lord forms his perfect six-pointed star. It is an ancient symbol, far more ancient than any culture that's currently upon the planet. But it symbolizes the very Merkaba, the very fiery chariot, into which our light field is now merging, into a similar patterning that we call the Christ consciousness grid. And so we each have around us this configuration. Those of us who are the ground crew, those of us who have come on purpose with a divine commission, a divine call and impetus that drives us into a pre-planned and predestined path. That is why we can walk in absolute security, knowing that our steps are indeed ordered, and that which we are marked to do as we step forward in the place that opens to us within this moment and walk in the light of that divine call and purpose, that divine truth and love, we will find that everything unfolds perfectly as it's meant to. Things show up in time. People appear in just the right moment. Doors open. Favor is extended, which opens again more opportunities. And you'll find that there is an ease in that that I've often referred to as walking in love and living by grace. You transcend the law because it has been fulfilled in the perfect love that you have for the beloved who lives in you and manifests through you. So the world we dream, we see, of destruction and terrorism and all manner of scary things is not the real world. And we have touched upon this particular theme many, many times. But tonight we're going to look at it through the chrysalis of the consciousness of our dear friend, the Avatar Sai Baba, and a dear friend of mine by the name of Dr. John his love. And there are some things I want to share that he has written down in notes that really point to the active participation that those of us are working as we work with the divine force, let's say, the divine power of supernatural intervention as it has entered our world, as it is influencing our world, and as it is producing a particular outcome that is as sure as the rising of the sun tomorrow morning. There is no possibility that the divine plan will not unfold perfectly. I will share with you some prophetic insights that have been given, and also a general overview of the consciousness unfoldment as it impacts each one of us, so that you can find your own toehold, your own particular, let's say, reflection of truth, and find greater clarity for your next step. I find many people are extremely concerned about wanting to know what's going to happen in the future. And in truth, behind every inquiry as to what am I supposed to do, where am I supposed to live, what's going to happen on the planet, what's going to happen in 2012, is the world going to end, what's happening with the oil spill, when are we going to stop, all of these questions are based without exception upon a feeling of fear and a desire to know outcome in order to create some measure of safety or to control or manipulate the outcome. And these approaches are completely counterproductive from for anyone who sincerely wants to awaken, fully awaken, and be fully effective at this time in serving. We best serve from a position of freedom ourselves. If we are ourselves so caught up in the prison hold of personal self-focus, self-concern, desire to safeguard our physical bodies, and that's all you can think about when you're in a state of self-preservation, is the fact that you're actually identifying with the illusion of your physical, let's say, mortality, your physical jeopardy, that sense of being very, very fragile in a world that seems to be railroading over you, over which you have no control. This is the common state of a person who is in the mode of complete ignorance as to who they are, where they've come from, and their divine purpose. So again, we return again and again to the truth that you are in God. God is in you. Wherever you are, God is. You live and move and have your being at all times in the light, the love, and the living word of God. That life impulse is what acts through you. And everything that you do from a basis of divine love is the evidence that you have merged with God and that that divine spirit is operating through you, because it always manifests as love, as truth, as life, as light, and as peace. And where there is righteousness in your heart, there will be beauty radiating in your character. And when there is beauty radiating as your character, there is going to be harmony in your home. And where there is harmony in your home, there will be an expanding order within the nation. And when there is order in the nation, there is quite naturally peace in the world. This is an ancient Vedic prayer. It's also found in many of the world faiths. But the point of it is it brings everything home to roost within your own consciousness. And again, the conscious awareness within you is God. Or, as it's called in Sanskrit, Chaitanya or Chitta. It is the ability to inquire into, penetrate, and realize truth. It's that divine cognitive creative intellect within you, sometimes also called the Atma. So find that place within you which speaks to you as your sense of rightness, righteousness, or conscience. That's how that part of you communicates to you. And if you do not get yourself confused in the teachings and writings and words and doctrines and interpretations of others, you will find that it is the surest and truest guide to what you need to do at any given moment in your life. Your conscience, when you listen to it, becomes so attuned to spirit, to this divine spirit, that it becomes literally the voice of divine knowing and guidance within you. And you learn never to transgress the guidance, the warnings, and the dictates of that conscience. You see, this understanding transcends all of the God boxes, all of the definitions of the shoulds and should nots, all of the things that separate when you bring divine unlimited truth down into the limitation of human mental understanding couched in limitation. So let's emerge out of this confining and defining of our understanding tonight and see if we can expand and soar to take off a much broader perspective. Now, we often repeat that the world you see arises as a dream when the truth that you are is misidentified with the temporal material creation. And again, your consciousness and your conscience will guide you by a process, really, of aversion therapy. Because when you get involved in something that is not true, the first thing is that it produces unhappiness. Another term for happiness could be union with God. So when you're unhappy or depressed and you're not experiencing the enthusiasm, which is the uprising of the divine within you, you're not experiencing the inspiration, which again is the movement of the Holy Spirit within you, but you're feeling oppressed and suppressed, you are looking at something, beloved, that is giving you feedback that it's not real. It is the ego's nightmare. What is the ego? The belief that you are separate from God. And with that belief that you're separate from God, immediately comes the desire to run away, and to hide. So that is, of course, the opposite of standing in the transparent and pure light of truth, which never has any need for defending or pretending or covering in any way. It simply stands. Those of you who have written to me and described that you've been having dreams where you're nude, but you're not feeling ashamed. You just notice you don't have any clothing on, or you have very white garments on. That is your inner self reflecting to you the fact that you are at last standing unadorned in the light of divine truth itself. See, your night dreams will often play to you the reflection of where you have identified and placed yourself in conscience, in your conscious awareness in your daily life. So you can use the dream much as you would use a thorn to remove a thorn. The dream itself can be useful when you learn to be a lucid dreamer. So you're aware that you're in a dream, and yet within the dream you awaken and go on with the dream, but you're not fooled any longer by being so caught up in the dream that you've lost all sense of who you are as a divine being. So the old saying that you are a divine spirit temporarily having a human experience is a good place to get a toehold in this perspective. It's going to be different for each one of you because we're all in different places in terms of the awakening. Why don't we awaken all at once? Well, for the simple reason that that's not the way the divine process unfolds. Why? Because if suddenly there was so much light, everyone spontaneously awakened fully, then the lower creation would vanish, like a poof of like the dissolving of a mirage before the light of the sun. And while that's appropriate in people here and there, it would not be appropriate for the entirety to awaken at the same time, because then the divine play would be interrupted in its gradual unfolding. So there's a certain divine delight that we are corporately taking, let's say, in awakening gradually. It's like the unfolding of a petal, of the petals of a perfect rose. You don't want to just go boom all of a sudden. You want, you know, each petal to gradually release its fragrance and reveal more and more of the beauty and perfection of the rose or the lotus, as our symbology may be. So likewise, you're like a beautiful flower that's awakening petal by petal to the light of the divine awareness. That is your awareness. It is your divine presence awakening within yourself, within the human dream. But there's a certain deliciousness in the process that we all like to savor. So why is this world that is filled with scary things not real? Well, it's because it is based upon the projection of fear and separate identity, separate bodies. And whenever there is another that's perceived as separate and different, that quality of fear or sense of threat arises. These are states that arise within the consciousness, but are not based upon accurate seeing. So such a perception of the world arises from the ego mind, which is the very form that the separated, fearful self assumes. That's the lower mind, or the carnal mind, as it's often been referred to. It has no knowledge of the light. It has no inclination to move into the light. It is made of the warp and woof of ignorance. So the good news is that it is entirely unreal. It, like the dream it projects, vanishes the minute that the full light of awareness dawns within your mind. Because beyond the ego mind is the divine mind, or the buddhi, or the intellect that is the creative consciousness of God itself. So, could a God that is the very quintessential, eternal, purest love, joy, and peace have any part in creating a world that is outpicturing in these nightmarish scenarios? Of course not. Because God, like each of us, God creates and we project the contents of our consciousness, the contents of our nature. So God's nature is to create that which is good. In the Bible, everything he created pleased him, and he saw that it was good. And within man, he placed his very spirit and was pleased to do so. So we have the ability, the unique ability as the human being, to house the fullness of the divine spirit, so that we are literally created to be many expressions of the one in time and space. And when we live in that state, we are considered to be an awakened son of God, or a soul that has mastered that divine state to where it's become the normal state. And that's, of course, what many of us are moving into, because some of those who are drawn to listen to these transmissions are just in that very last bit of perfectioning within time and space, within the human instrumentality. You're just integrating the last bits of that divine awareness, so that some of you are awakening very rapidly. It's almost like you're coming to from having been in a deep, deep sleep. And in truth, we are asleep, completely asleep, until we awaken to the divinity inherent within ourselves and within all life. So, the good news is this. Everything that causes you unhappiness, misery, dread, and despair is a temporary dream from which you will at some point awaken. And you will awaken to pure love and pure joy. Let me repeat that. You will awaken from everything that has caused you unhappiness, misery, dread, and despair. And when you awaken, fully awaken, you will experience but pure joy, love, and peace. I think that is really good news. Because like Jesus, we are not of this world. We have come into this world that the world through us might be set free. Because no one ever awakens alone. We awaken, and as we do, that awakening communicates to the totality of the collective sonship and to the totality of all that exists. Everything is brightened just that much more. So, every enlightened sage, guru, avatar, divine incarnation, every advanced race of cosmic visitors has repeated this same message over and over. In fact, in previous times, these celestial visitors were most often taken to be gods and were later worshipped by the people to whom they appeared. They didn't want that to happen. They never intended that to happen. But that was what happened. And that is how every single world religion came to exist. There was always a more advanced being that appeared in the world and was taken to be a god. Now, they all said, you know, God dwells in all of you. Awaken. You are divine. You're asleep. Wake up. But people preferred to isolate and separate and define that particular person alone to be God. And they never took the trouble or the effort, in most cases, to awaken themselves. They were not able to understand. Part of that is the fact that we have been for many thousands of years in what's called the Kali Yuga, which is the age of darkness and supreme ignorance. It is when Dharma stands, instead upon four sturdy legs, it stands on one leg and is in danger of collapsing. In fact, to all appearances, it looks like everything, to quote the old phrase, is going to hell in a handbasket, because everything in the age of darkness and ignorance is governed by lawlessness and crime and ignorance and disarray. But we are in now the ending of this Kali Yuga and the dawning of the Satya Yuga, which is called the age of truth or the age of dawning light, or the 12,000-year cycle of light, as the Mayans call it, or the new heavens and the new earth. There are many metaphors for this same state, but we are now right in the very process of moving into that state, which is why there's a almost an exponential domino effect of awakening that's reverberating throughout the collective sonship, those of us who are the celestial ground crew of volunteers. So if you haven't been awakened, or you're just in the process of finding your feet in this particular walk of light, you may be experiencing some of the things that I'll be sharing. Right. So when I use the term avatar today, I'll have to remind myself that many of you listening probably don't have a clue of what the real term avatar means, because today the term has been associated with a fictitious identity that one, it's like a caricature of oneself created upon the computer. Or now, since the movie Avatar, it's associated with a race of blue beings with pointed ears that fly on some sort of a mythological creature through treetops. And, you know, they're created by Hollywood. No, that's not what we're talking about. An avatar, by Sanskrit definition, is the descent of a being from a more advanced world, dimension, or civilization. And there are many different forms of avatars. Some of them embody a particular divine quality. Some of them come on a particular mission focus, as Jesus the Christ did, to be the savior and the redeemer of Adamic race, the Adamic man. Some come with a particular task, like Buddha, to bring a particular perspective of enlightenment and to reveal the middle way that's not dependent on either extreme. Each one has their own particular job assignment. And tonight we're looking through the lens of the avatar Sai Baba, who has been called a cosmic avatar, and one who embodies, let's say, the quintessential blueprint for the manifestation of the golden age upon Earth, which has much to do with the restoration of the righteousness in which all golden ages exist and are governed. They are godly, and they are presided over by enlightened beings and are caricaturized by truth. So that's the age that we're moving into. The Satya Yuga is the age of truth, even as the age that we're coming out of has been the age of darkness and ignorance of divine truth. About that movie Avatar, oh my gosh, my friend insisted upon taking me, and I found it to be so tedious after about the first 10 minutes I could hardly wait to get out of the theater. And it was so long, it seemed to go on forever. And while it had a couple nice scenes to it, by and large, it was just more of that ugly fighting and killing and all of that stuff that humans create, and burning and destroying beauty and environments. And yet it was interesting. So many people grasped into this Hollywood set creation like a drowning person grasped onto a floating log. And I thought, wow, we are so starved for any semblance of visionary beauty and hope that you grabbed to some fantasy like this out of desperation. I mean, it beats all the crime that's portrayed in most movies and violence and ugliness, although there was certainly a lot of killing and destroying and high-tech destruction in this particular movie, which I thought was just such a waste of time and money. I don't know why they don't depict truth. It would be so much simpler to simply portray the actual truth of who man is, where man has truly come from, why he's here, and the hopefulness of what we're moving into as we awaken to our divine estate and inheritance. Why not depict that? Without making it into some religious god box or some doctrinal a compromise, why not just bring it into the pure presentation of that which it is? I don't understand. And then we had another bit of nonsense, Alice in Wonderland, which is, again, to me, much ado about nothing. I remember I was about 5 years old and my mother tried to read me that story, and I said, that is the stupidest story I've ever heard of. I don't want to hear it, even as a nonsense. And then we have these space theme movies, which I also find extremely boring, predictable, and tedious, because here you have supposedly more advanced people behaving humanly out of human-based emotions and ego, ego fights and conflicts and all that stuff. And you can sure understand why human beings on planet Earth have been quarantined and prevented from traveling into the more advanced realms and worlds and polluting them with this stuff. We've got to awaken and get over this proclivity to constantly be at war against someone or something. That is the whole presentation of the ego, is to be against something, to fight against something, to project evil upon another, and to hold polarizations. That is the whole game of the ego. So, Earth has had primarily contact with races that are also self-serving, also here because they have an agenda, they want something, they need something, and they're slightly more advanced in terms of technology, but they're just as entrapped in the ego, negative ego states as human beings, because really, you attract into your life what you are. How could you do otherwise? So until we right now this planet is considered extremely dangerous with an extremely warlike and primitive base level of consciousness. And that's why the star-seeded ambassadors from higher worlds have been embodying in great droves. In fact, it said that 95% of the children being born into our world today are of a totally higher order of consciousness. And as I said in previous shows, those higher souls started coming in about the late 20s, 30s, 40s. They started coming in until by, I would say, the mid-80s, almost the most of the lower astral souls were barred from incarnating, and the higher souls were incarnating, which is interesting because that's about the time that we began to really question how wrong it was to abort the fetus, and laws began to be placed governing that process, because now it truly would be criminality to take the life of a fetus, because there are so many really, truly great souls trying their best to come in at this time to be the light in this world. So, again, part of the awakening is to realize that we need, at this time, divine intervention in the terms of very advanced souls coming who will be assisted in their awakening as quickly as possible so they can, and in many cases, they start from childhood giving their gifts. So it's only when we awaken within the dream that our true life begins. Up until that time, we're, you know, the human is like the walking dead. And I think it was Ralph Waldo Emerson who mentioned that it's only when we awaken in the dream that we can say that we truly live and that we have a real life. So he was one of the spiritual travelers that was sharing his message through his insightful commentary and writing. So every enlightened person has, almost without exception, referred to awakening suddenly to a new level of life. And some liken this to awakening from the dream of this world and being able to see as if for the first time. I've spoken about this in terms of the born-again experience, where you are spiritually regenerated and you literally become a new person in Christ. But there's another way that this is happening with people too, that are, it's language in a slightly different way, but you have the same experience. And I know when it happened to me, I was about 23 years old, and I had 3 hours and 45 minutes of missing time. But when I returned to my physical awareness, I was in an entirely illumined state of being. And I remember that everything was so clear to me. Not only was it visually very, very vivid and beautiful and exquisite, everything I looked at, the world was illumined with beauty and light and love, and I had a tremendous sense of deepest peace. And shortly around that time, too, I can remember I was driving my car, and all of a sudden I externalized from my body, and I clearly remembered being above my body, watching my physical body driving my car, and seeing my hands on the steering wheel, but I was up out of my body, above my body, and I had the realization that I was not my body, that I was a spirit quite apart from the physical form. And that realization, those two levels of awakening and realization, stayed with me and gave me that reference point for myself as being something quite apart from the physical body. So there will be some of you that's probably had experiences of this nature, and you're never the same afterwards. And that's how you can tell it was a genuine experience of enlightenment, because you don't lose it. But having said that, prior to every major expansion of awareness or initiation, you will often be taken to the mountaintop, so to speak, and given a preview vision, an overview, and experience, which people language as a epiphany or a peak experience. And then it seems like you go kind of back to your former consciousness, not quite as the same. You have that vision to light your way, but there seems to be a process of where you have to then secure the territory. You have to move into it and begin to integrate it to where it becomes your normal state. And then you find that just like a series of mountain ranges that seem to go off into the horizon, there's again, another peak. So once you've attained one, you descend into the valley and you begin your ascent again on the next peak, and then the next and the next. And in spirit, it seems that there's always this quantum advancement that prevails. There's always a next. There's always an et cetera, that eternally traveling consciousness that is the ongoing progression and unfoldment of ever-expanding divine awareness. I love it. I think it's beautiful to have that kind of a perception of life, because you know there's always going to be greater and more. And that's another thing I want to encourage you with, that from here on out, even though the ending of a dream may take some very vivid out-picturing, please know that it's getting better and better and better and better, and it's just leading you into glory, revelation after revelation, and greater joy and unfolding peace and sense of wholeness. That shalom, that is the wholeness, will begin to be that from which you live more and more consistently. I want to share some insights about this unfolding awareness from my good friend, Dr. Jack Hislop. This is taken from an interview exchange that he had with the Avatar Sai Baba in December of 1982, in which Sai Baba was speaking about the changes in consciousness that we were going to be going through. And bear in mind that many of these things have already, in a sense, taken place for many people. I know they have for me, and I think maybe for many of you. So we have made tremendous leaps since 1982. But this was almost like the very emerging of a new momentum that was taking place in the world at the time. Dr. Hislop was an interesting man. I first met him in 1972 on my first trip to Sai Baba, and he was the driest, most intellectual, didactic man you would ever want to meet. He was dry as a piece of toast, and he was always asking questions. He called Sai Baba Swami, which means teacher, and whatever Swami would say, he would quote Swami, he'd say, "Am I given to understand that Swami has said," and then he would slowly repeat everything Swami had said until, you know, those of us in the interview with him would, like, you know, we'd be going crazy. But I always appreciated Jack Hislop, because he would always ask those questions that we would all want to ask if we had the presence of mind to do so, but seldom did. So because of his inquisitive nature and relentless questioning of Sai Baba, we have several wonderful books in which he has recorded his questions and answers with Sai Baba. I'm going to be sharing from his biography called My Baba and I by Dr. John S. Hislop. I highly recommend it. It's a wonderful book. And this same dry piece of toast man became the juiciest, most absolutely heart-melting devotee of the Lord you could ever, ever, ever meet. He was so devoted that I heard it was said one time that he was Sai Baba's greatest Western devotee. And he is what is called a Saguna Bhakta. A Saguna Bhakta is a person who worships God in a specific form. And a Nirguna Bhakta would be a person who worships the God more in a formless aspect, as a sound or the light, or you know, something that is not in a physical form. But Dr. Hislop was very devoted to the physical form of the avatar. And the word Baba means father. It's the same word in Sanskrit that is called Abba in Hebrew. So Baba, Abba, same thing. And Sai means divine mother. So that's the quality of the divine father and the divine mother manifesting as this divine embodiment that we call Satya Sai Baba, whom, by the way, I have gone to see in India 11 times and had, I think I've had 11 also interviews with him myself, my last one being in 1982. So I was there at the same time that Dr. Hislop is writing this particular portion. And I quote from his passage, recorded December 2nd, 1982, and he's riding in the car with Baba. I'm going to call him Jack. Jack is speaking. Swami gives three stages of evolution beyond the human: the superhuman, the cosmic, and the absolute. What does superhuman mean? Sigh. Superhuman is a stage of complete detachment from the body and the world. Something may be said or done at this stage to benefit humanity and the world, but the superhuman is no longer a part of the world of men, nor involved in the interests of men. Jack, are there such people now? Sigh, oh yes. Jack, are they those people who dwell in the Himalayan mountains, who can be invisible and do extraordinary things that we hear about? Sigh, no, those individuals are still seeking liberation, but their liberation is temporary. Jack, temporary? Swami, that's awful. To get liberation and then lose it? Sigh, there are three kinds of liberation. It is experienced in one type of samadhi. Samadhi is a state of consciousness in which the mind becomes unified into one state. To continue. Then a person who is engaged in spiritual practice can suddenly, like a flash of lightning, have a clear vision of the truth. But it fades and ordinary life resumes. Liberation cannot be permanent without total surrender. So as a little aside, that's what I was speaking about when I mentioned getting a preview on the mountaintop, having a peak experience, and then coming back down with a little more light, but still having to secure and integrate that higher awareness. So that's what Sai Baba is speaking about. Then, Jack, then if not the people in the Himalayas, who are the superhumans? Sai. He names a half a dozen or so of the ancient sages. These people were totally above human and worldly life, although for the benefit of others, they could give certain advice and engage in certain actions. Jack, but that was long ago. Are there superhumans in this day and age? Sigh, oh yes, there are. But today, outwardly, they live in society and outwardly cannot be recognized. I think this is an important point for us to focus on here. The enlightened people today, the superhumans today, live outwardly in the world, in society, and cannot be recognized. Baba spoke about that in one of our interviews. That's why Jesus said that by their fruits you will know them. And the fruit, the ninefold fruit of the Holy Spirit, as I've mentioned in numerous shows, is love, joy, peace, kindness, goodness, patience, self-control, faith, and one other that's not in my mind at the moment. But you get the idea. There are qualities, divine qualities, that show forth as the fruit of a person who is connected to the living vine of the Christ consciousness. And that's how you can recognize these people, by their fruit. Now, to continue. Jack. What is the cosmic stage? Sigh. The cosmic stage is no body, no mind, no perception or identification with body or mind. Both have disappeared. Both have dissolved into the light. Body, feelings, mind, intelligence are no longer there in the human state of understanding. Just pure divine love and pure spirituality, which is manifested as pure divine love. So again, the fruit of that dissolving of all the separated self is this pure, unconditional divine love. Jack, are there entities, individuals in this cosmic stage right now? Sigh. No, not individuals. More similar to currents of spiritual power. Jack. Well, the absolute is Swami. That is understood. When Swami says he will confer liberation at death, what does that mean? Sigh. It means that birth is finished with. There is no more birth again. Jack. But Swami, there is this temporary liberation that was mentioned before. Maybe it's of that kind. Psi. No, it is not like that. If Psi gives total, final liberation. Jack, could there be ending of individuality too? Psi, there could be. Jack, individuality is a nuisance. Psi, yes, individuality is a nuisance. Jack, devotees often ask what happens after death. All that I'm able to reply is that I understand from Swami that after death experience is not the same for everyone. Psi, that is the correct answer. In each case, there is a physical body that is left behind. That is similar. But beyond that, it is not similar. Jack, well, Swami, one has to die. Is there some skill in dying? That is there a correct road through death which one can hold to and not get lost in the process? Psi, that is not up to you at the time. You are influenced at the time of death by the overall net effect of your life. That's why in India it's really, really trained from the time you're a little child, in families that are more enlightened, to repeat the name of the Lord. They do that all the time on their rosaries, so that it said if you remember the name of the Lord at the time that you die, you will go to the Lord. It's also taught in India that whatever you worship, you will go to. If you worship demons, you will go to demons. If you worship angels, you will go to angels. If you worship nature spirits, you will go to nature spirits. But if you worship God, you will go to God. So it's very, very important, and it's trained, you know, from earliest childhood in India to keep your mind focused on God and to repeat the name of the Lord with devotion and love so that you keep company. Whenever the name of the Lord is pronounced, the Lord has to take a form within your auric field. So that's how you can keep constant company with the Lord, by calling upon his name with love and devotion. Not in vain, not like a parrot, but with true love and devotion. And in that process, you constantly keep company with God. So automatically, if you've done that from you know, your whole life, you've been focused on God, of course, at your last moment, your last thought is going to be upon the Lord, which then carries you directly into the presence of the Lord. So it's really important to train your consciousness to always be God-focused and God have God always uppermost in your awareness. Back to the dialogue here. So Psi, that is not up to you what happens to you after death. You are influenced at that time by the overall net effect of your life. Jack, Swami says that God acts to save the devotee from perdition. What is meant by perdition? Psi, what do you understand from the word? Jack, it seems to me that perdition means hell. Psi, that is just a mental concept. Jack, but the Buddha speaks of hell as a real place. Psi, it is a place. It is a place of the mind, a mental state in which there is much worry and suffering. It is an after-death state. Psi is here to guide his devotees so they do not fall into that state. Jack, one of Swami's statements is not understood. Swami has said that man is born with a dual gift from God, discrimination and conscience, and that because of conscience, everyone knows right from wrong. For if he were to do wrong, his conscience would trouble him. Psi, yes, that is the case. Jack, but people point out, Swami, that people of one religion kill people of another religion, and they do it because their conscience tells them that it's right to do it. Psi, that is wrong thinking. That is not the way. When such things occur, it is because the individual has surrendered his judgment to someone else or to an idea or propaganda that has been spread by someone else. If the person were to reject such ideas and rely upon himself, his own divine conscience, then even though deeply buried, it would be there to prompt the person. For conscience is God, resident in that person. Jack, throughout the world, crime is growing rapidly, but in America, there is doubt about how to deal with criminals. How should criminals be dealt with? Psi. There must be punishment. Cause and effect is always there. Jack. Swami, people are saying that after your 60th birthday, Bhagavan Baba will step away from contact with the world and that his devotees will no longer have access to him. Psi. No, no, not at all. Psi is not separating from the world, nor will he separate from his devotees. Of course, an avatar goes invariably through the same stages. It is the same for every avatar at all times. The first 16 years of life are characterized by constant leelas. Leelas are like divine plays, you know, interactive plays, and sporting, having fun with the people and the environment. Then leelas and teachings progress up to the age of 45. And from age 45 to age 60, the emphasis shifts to almost entirely one of teaching. At age 60, there is a very big change. Jack, how, Swami? And Sai Baba listed some things and said that he should not repeat them, so he didn't. But Sai goes on to say, after age 60, Sai will directly give added strength to the mind persons who are actively working with him. Now we're starting a time of change. Sai Baba, by the way, is 84. It is just as when a strong wind comes up suddenly and blows away the husks, leaving only the sound kernels. So from age of 60 on, in these times, many devotees will fall away from Sai Baba, leaving only those devotees whose faith is sound and solid. Have you not yourself noted such a change? In the early years, I came to your room to talk personally with you. Now you have to come and sit on the veranda each day, and Sai does not even look at you or stop to speak with you. Such changes occur in the different stages of the avatar. Well, I have to say, I was present at that 60th birthday, and I heard him purposely, physically say some of these things from the talk that he gave that day. So we saw many people were very offended that suddenly they were being ignored. I had my last physical interview with Sai Baba in 82. My husband and I had a private personal interview with him. And I haven't had an interview since then, but then I haven't needed or wanted one either. I feel very like he's given me everything, and I feel very full and fulfilled and whole and complete. And I don't have any desire even to see him or be with him or anything of that nature. So he gave me everything, filled me up, and set me forth to do work. And but there has been a tremendous falling away of devotees and all sorts of things that have happened. And I guess that's the result of the winds that he said would blow and blow away everyone but those that are firmly rooted in devotion. And bear in mind that when he speaks of his devotees, he never talks about devotees of Sai Baba. His devotees are all people who seek God. Whatever religion you are, whatever name or form that you adore, he represents the love of the divine that is resident in all forms. He doesn't identify with being a separate individual, separate from other manifestations of the divine. That's a quality of a God-conscious being, by the way, and it's very much an evidence in Sai Baba's conscious expression. Jack, Swami has said that the entire world will know of his presence, but at this time only a relatively few people know of Sai. As of now, only local individuals represent him, and they do not draw the attention of people of substance and importance throughout the world. Sai. Sai does not look at status and worldly importance. He looks only at the heart. Sai does not force such things. He will be in the body for many more years. And what you refer to will be devotees of world stature able to speak of Sai will be present when the time is correct for them. And this is an interesting thing. There was a woman that was a beggar along the road that we used to pass, and she would always know when the taxi or Sai Baba's car was coming by, and she could tell if it was Sai Baba or if it was one of the devotees, And she would always be out to greet us, and of course we'd always give her some food or some money or something. So this is the experience of Jack Hislop when he was on the road to Anantapur with Sai Baba in his car. We came upon a woman, beggar, who was blind, and Baba stopped and gave her money, and she responded with Sai Ram, Swami. It had been 2 years since he had been to Anantapur, but without Baba even speaking, she recognized the sound of his car and recognized him. Jack, this woman seems to be very happy. Sai, she was born blind but is always happy. She has no worries. Jack, how could that be? Look at her life. It must be a life of misery. Sai, why? She has no desires and is content. She does not know the life of a person who has sight. She does not even think that others are different from her. Her family is worried about her condition, but she herself has no worries at all. Jack, how could she not want a life bigger? Sai, desires arise from the tendency of the mind to compare. It is chiefly the eyes, the vision, which presents to the mind opportunities for comparison. She is blind. Her mind is not busy with comparison, so no desires arise. Jack, if she continues happy and content, will she be finished with life and death and be free at the time she dies? Sai, no. That requires spirituality. Jack, it is very important to know what Swami has said, that the ground from which desires arise is the mind which makes comparisons. And again, that's really, really important to bear in mind that out of the ego mind, we make comparisons. Out of the comparisons, we develop envy and covet the things that belong to others. From the covetousness of our gaze, we develop lust and attachment and desires to have more and more, and greed increases. And with all of these attachments, we become bound by the laws of karma, which means as you sow, so shall you reap. And in order to reap the effects of all of these desires that are generated out of the ego self, you have to take successive embodiments to work out all of these things. So that's why Sai Baba says that we need to sublimate the desires for things of the world and transpose that desire to one desire, which is to know the truth and to know God and to love God and to serve God and be involved with that God focus. Then the desires themselves become consumed in the flame of our love and devotion, and then we're set free through grace. So that was some of what I wanted to share. Also, Sai Baba is speaking to Jack about the dream state. Jack, Swami informs us that this life in the world is a dream only. Sai, yes, it is but a dream. Jack, but Swami works endlessly in the dream. Why? Sai, if the dream is realized as a dream, then the world is done with, and Swami is here to help those who are caught up in the dream. Jack, but it is still a dream without purpose or end, so why bother with it? Sai, a big scientist may know that a child's world is a dream and has no reality which is lasting, but this does not prevent him from sitting down with the child at the child's level. Again, Sai could be likened to a great aircraft, which briefly touches down in order to take passengers up from the ground. Jack, Swami, there is only room for a limited number. Sai, limited, yes, but there is always room for a limited number only. Jack, Swami, how can I get a booking? Sai, by grace. Booking on this divine airplane is through grace. It is true that reservations must be made, but on the plane, it's usual that the government has some seats reserved. So Swami can say, Hislop is given one of those reservations. Jack, what is the difference between Swami's grace and Swami's blessings? They are one and the same. Swami's blessings, His grace, His love, all mean the same. How can I get Swami's grace? Swami's grace is always there. Swami is always there. He is here for everyone in the world. I am always willing, but they do not listen, and they do not come. So what can I do? And with that, he got up and began to take a group into the private interview room for a private conversation. And as he got up to move to the doorway, he turned and looked at Jack and said, "I'm always happy. My bliss is ever full and never disturbed." And Jack responded, "Because Swami knows that this world of experience is only a dream." And Sai made no response. Those of you that are intent to realize God are going to love this book. And again, that's My Baba and I by Dr. John S. Hislop, which is usually called Jack Hislop. So I want to read a little bit of what, I'm going to share with you a little bit of what Swami has shared that is happening right now, with some of the things that are happening in the world. Originally, he gave this information on October 29th in 1971 and was given to 18 of his university students. So much the more dire aspects have been already superseded by his grace and compassion that they haven't taken place. So I have taken just a few of the things that pertain to this particular time that we're in right now, just to give you some idea of what he has shared, bearing in mind that we're going to see very dramatic divine intervention insert itself into the affairs of mankind. From now on, we're going to see more and more of that. So this updated version was given to Isaac Tigert on February 1st, 2008. Baba is quoted to have said that November 23rd, 2009 is the beginning of the end of the Kali Yuga. In other words, the Iron Age, characterized by ignorance, crime, evil, and lawlessness, comes to an end at that time and will be followed by a time of purification, resulting in various catastrophes, the changing of the Earth's axis, which is what the Mayans have told us, earthquakes, floods, volcanic eruptions, and nuclear accidents. However, he said there will not be a third world war, there will not be a nuclear war, or anything of that nature, but there will be nuclear accidents and epidemics and submergence of continents and asteroids and comets that have packed the Earth. The end of the Kali Yuga will be accomplished, he says, by the end of 2010. So presumably a lot of these things will be happening, the last. There will be no nuclear war, but there will be nuclear accidents leading to a nuclear-free planet by the end of 2010. Wow, that will be really powerful. The hand of God will come down and neutralize atomic effects on mankind. It's interesting, the Keys of Enoch mentions this too. The system of governance will entirely change. It will be more like the ancient Vedic system, where you have a warrior for the leader, and you have a priest counselor that is like the spiritual advisor to that head of state. A new star will appear in the sky, and the world will become very overheated in one day. Between 2010 and 2012, most of these events will occur. There will be an end of the present technological mechanical age. As continents sink, new land will rise. I thought it was interesting that recent reports have said that off the coast of Australia, the seabed is raising at the degree of 15 feet a day. Wow. So what we're seeing is Atlantis and Lemuria, those ancient continents, will be coming up. That's probably what's rising out of the seabed in the Gulf is Atlantis. So the devotees of the Lord throughout the world will be protected by God consciousness. devotees may also exercise their own free will to move to safer lands. He says that New Zealand, Australia, Indonesia, and South India, he particularly mentions, to be safe lands. I would have to say advisably safe, because he says there will be no place that will be entirely without effects. He's also told us that food will materialize in your puja room or place of worship, like the manna that manifested for the ancient Israelites and is also manifesting today for people. I've actually seen the manna. So the weather will change worldwide. It will become cooler in South India. And this is very interesting, what happens on December 21st, 2012, at exactly 3 p.m. and 33 seconds, the DNA will change in the entire human race. Wow. Sai Baba will be in the physical body until age 96. He's now, I believe, 84. And then he will vanish into light and reappear 9 months later as Prema Sai Baba. The devotees of the Lord will usher in the new spiritual age of righteousness during the year 2011. Wow. That's why we've got to really, really be on our game now, drop the, you know, the play acting and rise up in that divine light of awareness that is the divine self and have at it. You know, it's our turn. This will end the present age and begin a new age. This will bring the world back to righteousness, and it will be an age of truth. Everyone will know, love, and obey God. The people of love will inherit the new world of righteousness, and they are the people of God. And I think that is extremely good news. But, you know, there's going to be some powerful out-picturing it within the nightmare. So that's why we have to be really, take this time to get really centered in God and prepared for these times. So be the witness only of the world. Do your duty. You have to do the duty that occurs to you to do. That's how you can tell what you're to do, is that it not only is a desire that you want to be involved in that area, but it also is part of your talent and part of what you can tell you have the ability to address. And that's how you can tell what your duty or your dharma is. But the trick is not to associate with being the doer of your action, but you're simply the instrument through which the Divine Spirit does all things. So train yourself to disassociate from any kind of a desire for the fruit of your action or recognition for your action or money for your actions, and just be an agent to which God's Divine Spirit can minister grace and love and helpfulness. And bear in mind that whatsoever you do to the very least of them, you have done it to the Lord. And live with an intensity. Sai Baba says our intensity for God should be like our intensity would be if we were in a dark room with a snake that was wiggling somewhere in our vicinity. We have to be that intense, staying connected and in complete attunement with the Divine Spirit. And serve without demand, without personal agenda, without need for gain or recognition. Just serve, because service to God is service to man, and service to man is service to God. Look through the outer form of the person and realize that that is the beloved that indwells that person, regardless of what the outer form looks like or the behavior. Just train yourself to see right through the outer Halloween costume to the one beloved that is resident in all forms, and offer the fruits of your action to this beloved Lord. Take the hand of the beloved Lord when you wake up in the morning, walk through the whole day with the Lord, go to sleep at night in the arms of the Lord, and offer the fruit of all of your actions to the Lord. As you do that, you will find that you will naturally move into God consciousness. Because what is God consciousness but simply being conscious of God to the exclusion of everything else? And when you train yourself to see God in everything and in everyone, that state just naturally develops. And you'll notice every time you do that, you will feel an instant feedback of joy. Instant joy impacts you the minute you choose to see beyond the form to the resident divinity. And you have the attitude of, I love you, my Lord. My Lord and my God, I love you with all my heart and soul. And you say that inwardly and silently in your heart as you greet people, as you do things for people, as you interact with people. So all the time, you are simply relating with the Beloved. And then, however you transition into the next level, it will be with the Lord, and it will be effortlessly and lovingly and perfectly and beautifully. And before you know it, we will be in a world that Sai Baba said will be completely one of love and peace. So by the time he comes as Prema Sai Baba, he said, Prema Sai Baba means love. Prema is love. So the whole world will be love, 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 only love. No evil, no crime, no negativity anywhere, only the peace and the love of God. And that's going to be sooner than we can think. It's going to be, according to Baba, about the same time that the Mayans have given us, around 2017, 2018. And Prema Sai Baba will be coming about 2023, somewhere in there. So that gives you some idea of the divine play and how it's going to unfold, bearing in mind that our presence on the earth has made a tremendous difference, and we can even soften and mitigate more and more. Just as many things have not taken place that were predicted to have, you know, been on the possibility probability line, we can again make it even more beautiful. So let's walk in the love that we are. Let's lovingly give of ourselves to whomever and wherever we can be of loving service, and let's shift as effortlessly and lovingly as we possibly can into the age of truth and divine love. Let's go out chanting Anaihu. Deep breath. Anaihu. Anaihu. God bless you, beloveds. Walk in the light of the truth that you are, the divine image that you are, and be the love of God wherever you are. And God willing, I will be with you this time next week. And you've been listening to Commander Lady Athena of the Ashtar Galactic Command in Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. Adonai.